Public Radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Radio Catskill.
From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, as New York City casinos loom, a Catskills community fears for its future. That's here. Resorts World Catskills Casino is in front of the Bright Skyway Drive, about 5 minutes south of Monticello, and it's one of New York's big bets. But with crowded buses from New York City, Resorts World Catskills is giving a boost to the local economy. What happens when that competition moves downstate? We'll talk to New York Focus, who looked into this issue. Currently, there's only one registered nurse in Northeast Pennsylvania out of 80 statewide that have SANE training. That's Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner training. We'll learn more about a special program. Plus, we'll find out what's eDNA and a preview of the Big Eddie Film Festival. But first, the news.
Attorney General Merrick Garland is scheduled to testify this hour before the House Judiciary Committee. NPR's Windsor Johnston has more.
House Republicans have repeatedly argued that the Justice Department has been weaponized against conservatives. Today, Merrick Garland will face one of his harshest critics, Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, who's floated the idea of impeaching him. Garland is likely to face numerous questions about Justice Department investigations, including the probe into Hunter Biden's business dealings and special counsel Jack Smith's investigation into former President Donald Trump.
NPR's Windsor Johnston reporting. President Biden is scheduled to meet with the leaders of Brazil and Israel today in New York. NPR's Tamara Keith reports it's on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly.
Biden and President Luis Inácio Lula da Silva will meet with labor leaders to launch what they're calling the U.S.-Brazil Partnership for Workers' Rights. This as the UAW strike nears the one-week mark and as the Actors and Writers Guild strikes drag on for months. Administration officials say the goal of the initiative is to advance the rights of working people around the world. Biden is also meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, their first meeting since Netanyahu returned to office with a new, more conservative coalition government. Their agenda will include Iran and Biden's concerns about a judicial overhaul Netanyahu is trying to push through in Israel. Tamara Keith, NPR News, New York.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is holding a mini climate summit today during the first week of the new General Assembly. Officials from more than 30 nations have been asked to speak today, but not the U.S. or China. Guterres has sharply criticized nations for failing to meet their climate pledges, and he has repeatedly warned of climate catastrophe if they don't. Stocks opened higher this morning as investors wait to hear what the Federal Reserve has to say about interest rates this afternoon. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 160 points in early trading.
The central bank is widely expected to leave its benchmark interest rate unchanged this afternoon, while leaving the door open for a possible rate hike in November or December. Fed policymakers will also update their forecast of what they expect to do with interest rates next year. In June, most policymakers thought they'd be cutting rates in 2024. Some forecasters now think the Fed will have to leave rates higher for longer to get inflation under control. The annual inflation rate has fallen sharply from a year ago, but it inched up in July and August, largely as a result of rising gasoline prices. Inflation in the UK fell last month to its lowest level in a year and a half. That country's central bank is set to make its own decision on interest rates tomorrow. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News. Rwanda's President Paul Kagame, who has been in office since 2000, says he is running for a fourth term in office next year. Ish Mafundikwa reports the East African country's constitution has been adjusted a few times to clear the way for Kagame's candidacy.
One of the constitutional amendments allows 65-year-old Kagame to stay in power until 2034. He has been considered Rwanda's de facto leader since the end of the 1994 genocide and received more than 90% of the vote in the three elections since 2000. Confirming his candidacy to the French-language news magazine Jeune Afrique, Kagame said he is ready to serve Rwanda for as long as he can. Critics and rights organizations accuse him of being an autocrat who attacks and kills political opponents and journalists. For NPR News, I am Ish Mafundikwa in Harare.
In the U.S., a partial federal government shutdown is looming in 10 days, and House Republicans continue to squabble over spending bills. Yesterday, five hard right House Republicans helped block a defense spending bill that the GOP is backing. The defiant Republicans are demanding severe cuts in federal spending that won't pass the democratically led Senate. These stand little chance of becoming law. The fate of a short-term spending bill to avert a partial federal government shutdown is not clear. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Heather Sturt Haga and Paul G. Haga, supporting African Wildlife Foundation, working to ensure the future of Africa's wildlife and wild lands. Learn more at awf.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Resorts World Catskills, one of the four casinos New York approved by constitutional amendment in 2013, was touted as an economic development effort that would create jobs and generate revenue for upstate communities through taxes and tourism. It opened in February of 2018, and today it provides around 1,400 union jobs right here in Sullivan County. The casino has generated just half the tax revenue that had initially been projected, but it has attracted tourists and boosted the local economy. Now, as New York prepares to license up to three more casinos in the New York City area, locals worry that the already underperforming resort will lose customers, that busloads will dwindle, and the benefits the community was promised, they fear, will go with them. Jason Dole spoke to New York Focus reporter Arabella Saunders about potential casino cannibalism.
Where are these casinos, and have they opened? Are they about to open? Can you just give us a refresher on where things stand with all that?
For sure. So in 2013, New York legalized Vegas-style casinos, and at the time, the state was determined to spread the facilities across all of New York, so they split the licenses up into two rounds, with the first four licenses going to upstate, and 7 years after those four facilities were operational, licenses would open for downstate, so the New York City area, and in this January, applications opened up for those three casinos downstate, but it's still in the application process, so we're not sure which casinos will actually be licensed in the New York City area or how many.
This is a little further off than I thought, but still close enough to happening to be a concern.
For sure.
What's the potential consequences for our upstate community if these city casinos go ahead and open as planned after this application process?
Mm-hmm. So based on my conversations with community members in the Sullivan County area, people are worried about Resorts World Catskills losing customers, losing the people that are coming up to the Catskills, and but are then preferring to go down to the New York City area casinos. And in turn, the people who work at the resort would lose their jobs. People in the community are worried about decrease in visitors in the area, hurting local businesses like restaurant shops, hotels.
A lot has changed in our area in recent years and even recent decades. But one thing that's kind of been the same for many decades is the fact that tourism is still our number one industry. We rely on people coming from other places. And a majority, not all, but a majority of those places are the more urbanized tri-state area to our south, you know, the New York and New Jersey area. And when folks come up our way, they come from the thruway, they go to Route 17 to get here. So if there's casinos between where they are, casinos that are closer to them, that's a legit concern up here that people might not continue on the way up. And then coupled with that, there's questions about the performance of Resorts World Catskills in recent years, especially when you compare how it's doing now to, you know, the initial tax revenue projections. Can you talk to us about that?
For sure. So as part of the document describing why it selected each casino, the Gaming Location Facility Board, which is a New York State agency that oversees casino licenses, published a gaming tax revenue anticipated for 2019, which is when all the upstate casinos would be fully operational. But when 2019 actually rolled around, none of the four casinos achieved those initial projections. So 3 years later, in 2022, only one casino had met the 2019 gaming tax number, and the other three casinos, which included Resorts World Catskills, only attained 50 to 60% of their initial projections. So, for example, Resorts World Catskills originally projected that it would generate $20.7 million in gaming tax revenue for local governments, but in 2022, it actually only generated $10.6 million.
In your reporting, anything come up that indicates what might be the cause of that, why that might be?
So there's a few different reasons listed in the 2023 report from the New York Office of State Comptroller. Some notable ones are two state policy changes that were enacted in 2021. New York lowered taxes on the money collected from slot and electronic table games. And then the state also authorized mobile sports betting, which undercut the practice in-house. So both of those changes reduced the local gaming tax collections.
And then, of course, between like the opening and now, too, was the whole pandemic, which also affected things. But as you're saying there, there's clearly bigger issues than just the impact of the pandemic, which kind of impacted everybody. You know, even before the pandemic, there's this Genting group that operates Resorts World. They were facing some challenges. They even put additional funds into the casino to ensure its sustainability. But the same group opened another casino, I think with a similar name, in Newburgh. Isn't this essentially like just competing with yourself, basically?
Yeah, great question. Local officials seem to think so, for sure. So I spoke with the town supervisor for the town of Thompson, and he seemed to believe that was the case. He said that he thought that Resorts World Catskills had already taken a revenue hit as a result of the new casino location in Newburgh.
Again, Newburgh is a lot closer to where a lot of the folks that come up here live than we are up here. So it's like it's an easy place to stop if you're looking for that casino experience and not come up here. Has the Genting Group commented on this at all?
No, unfortunately, they did not. Resorts World Catskills did not respond to a detailed list of questions from me.
Do you have any other response from local officials? You said you'd be talking to Thompson's town supervisor. Are there other leaders like from our area that you're talking to that you've gotten a response from as we're looking at this situation?
Yeah, there was definitely a range of concern about the potential impact of New York City casinos. So the treasurer for Sullivan County told me there was a huge concern for the county. Assembly member Eileen Gunther, who represents Sullivan County, told me that she had fought tooth and nail to bring the casino to the area, and she really thought a New York City casino would put all that work in jeopardy. Other local officials were a little more optimistic. They hoped that Resorts World Catskills would revisit its marketing strategy to appeal to a wider range of people. So they talked about things like marketing other amenities that would draw people to the resort, like the golf course and the water park, rather than the casino.
There's a difference between like casinos, or as you said, like Vegas style casinos, and then there's racinos, is kind of a term for like we have at the Monticello Raceway, where there's a horse raceway there, and then there's some level of gaming there. Have you looked into this about how local residents, you know, horse owners and trainers and such, have been affected by Resorts World Catskills taking over the Monticello Raceway?
Yes. So I was able to visit the raceway while I was working on this story. And based on my conversations with people there, people seem to be most concerned with just the physical state of the place. You know, Resorts World Catskills took over management a few years ago, and the horse owners and the trainers I spoke with told me that the new management hadn't been upkeeping the track very well. If you go there, it's pretty much in disarray. You know, the grandstand's closed. The whole place looks abandoned almost. When I drove over there in the morning before the races started, I actually thought it was permanently closed. Until I saw a horse running around the track. So I drove over the stables where some trainers were standing, and my first question to them was, is this place open? Obviously, they told me it was, and I came back later in the afternoon to watch some races and talk to people there. But people are worried that the owners want to close the raceway, and they're worried about people losing their jobs as a result.
And it's already got that vibe. I know what you're talking about, that vibe of like feeling, hey, is this place open? Like, how's it doing? If it's that visible to somebody just driving by, I mean, you're a reporter, so you're kind of looking for these things, but I mean, that doesn't take a reporter's intuition to pick up on that. That's the sort of thing that people, customers, tourists would pick up on right away. They're like, hey, not the best vibe coming from this place that I'm not sure if it's open.
Yeah, for sure. And the people that were at the raceway, the owners, spectators, trainers, they knew that as well. They were telling me that. They're like, this place used to look a lot better back in the day. So, yeah, it was obvious.
I'm doubling back, I guess, on this tax issue, because was the reporting that you did that it's not just Resorts World Catskills, but other casinos that were approved in New York State are also behind on their tax revenue?
Yes. So that comes from the Office of the State Comptroller's most recent report, which found that none of the four casinos upstate had met their initial revenue projections in 2019. And then in 2022, only one casino, Tioga Downs, had met that 2019 number.
You know, this to me raises...
They're all lagging.
Yeah, they're all lagging. And again, I kind of asked this when it was just, we were just talking about the one, but now we're talking about all these upstate. I mean, is there any indication what the reasons are that they're all lagging? Was this just, was it a degree of hopeful thinking or hubris going into it that they overestimated, or have other problems emerged?
So based on just looking at the report from the state comptrollers, it was the two things I mentioned about the state policy changes. The state comptroller mentioned issues with location, which is something you were talking about earlier, with this idea that casinos can cannibalize each other, where if you have one casino placed too close to another one, it detracts business from it. The other concern, there's a little bit of concern with businesses taking a hit from the COVID-19 pandemic, but state policy change were the two big ones that were highlighted on that report.
When we go from that to then talking about like the state of the raceway, which brings to mind, you know, when the state was working on the budget, one of the things that people saw in what Governor Hochul was looking for in the budget was funds to help raceways in more affluent communities like up in Saratoga, but still, you know, trying to subsidize horse racing. You're seeing casinos lagging. Are there still a lot of people that want to go to casinos, or is the audience for this type of recreation not there in the way that people thought it was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, I'm still wondering the same thing. I know there's a lot of different opinions out there. I definitely spoke to some people who would say, no, there is not the market for casinos. But I think just speaking of the four upstate, when you look at the state comptroller's report and based on my conversations with people in the community, you know, Resorts World Catskills definitely did not deliver on the revenue that it promised. And now with New York City area casinos potentially coming soon, it could put the benefits that it did bring to the community in jeopardy.
Did that thought occur to you, like, while you were reporting on this? You're, like, looking around and finding yourself wondering that, too. Like, hey, is the market really here? Are people really that into this? Were you thinking that before you went into this story, or that something that occurred to you as you really started to dig in?
I was thinking that a little bit before I went in, and yes, definitely after reading the report. You know, it's a pretty grim report. Doesn't paint the most hopeful pictures for the future of casinos in New York State. So definitely there was something on my mind before and throughout the process of reporting this story.
Because it is such a grim report and it's coming from the state level, the state is kind of governing this whole thing. The state's the one that opened up the application process and, you know, regulates these things. Is there anything from state leaders about this? Any word from Albany that if the report's that grim, are they responding in any active way?
As far as active ways, I'm not sure. During the course of reporting this story, I was able to speak with Senator Liz Krueger as well as Assemblymember Ron Kim, and they both were very vocal about their opposition to casinos and the different ways that they negatively impacted people in the state of New York.
We've been talking to Arabella Saunders from New York Focus about her article. It's called As New York City Casinos Approach Catskills Community Worries About Its Future. This article is available at our website, wjffradio.org, and New York Focus is online at nysfocus.com. Arabella, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, sexual assault nurse examiners, also known as SANEs, they're registered nurses or advanced practice nurses that specialize in providing comprehensive and compassionate care to survivors of sexual assault. There's a nationwide shortage of SANEs, especially in rural areas, including ours. We'll learn more after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, you want to hear a secret? Every week, the Retro Cocktail Hour digs deep into the record library for space-age bachelor pad music, tiki tunes from the 1950s, TV crime jazz, swingin' soundtracks, and more. It's not your father's record collection. Oh, wait. It is your father's record collection. The Retro Cocktail Hour on WJFF Radio Catskill in Jeffersonville, New York.
Wednesday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill's Community Awards Ceremony is Thursday, September 28th. We're celebrating local arts and culture, honoring CAS, DVAA, NACL, Shandley Music Festival, Wayne County Arts Alliance, and Weekend of Chamber Music, along with special recognitions for Harold Tye, the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, and Franklin Trapp of the Forestburg Playhouse. Tickets at WJFFradio.org for Radio Catskills Community Awards. Thursday, September 28th, 5 to 7, Seminary Hill Orchard and Cidery in Calicoon.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. SANEs are sexual assault nurse examiners. For survivors of sexual assault, a forensic rape exam performed by a sexual assault nurse examiner can both be a key means of collecting evidence against their offender as well as a harrowing re-traumatization of their assault. There's a nationwide shortage of SANEs, especially in rural areas. Currently, there's only one registered nurse in northeastern Pennsylvania out of 80 statewide that have SANE training. Local survivors seeking SANE services must either travel to Scranton, likely on their own without use of an ambulance, or wait for the nurse to be contacted and make the trek out to where they are. For survivors of sexual assault, that forensic rape exam is important, and to maximize the ability to get more training, the Women's Resource Center of Lackawanna and Susquehanna Counties, or WRC, and Victims Intervention Program of Wayne and Pike Counties, or VIP, are hosting a sexual assault nurse examiner training to help increase the number of nurses with this skill. On the phone now to tell us more is Erica Thaxton, VIP's medical advocate, and Sabrina Hannon, WRC's medical advocacy program coordinator. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here and thank you for shedding light on this. It's just amazing to learn that there's only one nurse in all of northeastern Pennsylvania out of 80 statewide that have this same training. What does this mean for folks in the area that have gone through sexual assault?
Those numbers are looking at the number of fully certified SANEs. So, you know, the SANE process, it begins with the education of the didactic curriculum, and then, you know, in order to continue on towards certification, you have to do so many exams with a mentor and so many exams on your own. And it's a process in order to become a fully certified SANE. So although there is only one fully certified SANE in all of northeastern Pennsylvania, there are others that have taken or have participated in all of the didactic curriculum and stuff of that nature. One of the big problems in the rural areas is doing the amount of exams that are required for certification within the time frame that it's required in, because although sexual assault happens everywhere, obviously everything happens in greater rates when there's a bigger population of people.
And also, when this happens to someone, it's important how they're met upon this first experience, you know, how someone is treating them or caring for them, about how they tell that story, and then, you know, getting that care. With this additional training that the SANEs receive, what is the specific kind of care that victims can receive?
So the training really focuses on trauma-informed care. The nurses learn how to, you know, work with patients in a way that won't re-traumatize them, as well as how to collect the evidence And then also the process that they go through, perhaps with other agencies or the legal process, because they might be, if it goes to court, they will possibly be brought in to testify. So it goes through all of that, because there's a lot of apprehension around, specifically the, testifying process. No one wants to be the reason why, you know, a rapist goes free, and certainly not, nurses. So, they get training on all of that process and prepare them for, you know, the legal process as well as working with survivors and how to best serve them and the different situations that can come up, because it's also, it can be a lengthy exam and just, you know, really giving them the tools to help survivors and, you know, what referrals to make and, you know, obviously to reach out to their local rape crisis center.
Eric, I'm reading this VIP editorial that you sent through in advance of our interview, and it mentions that, you know, a victim, if you live in a county and you're a victim of sexual assault and there's not a SANE available, you could potentially get turned away, even though that's not allowed under Pennsylvania law. But someone could get directed to another facility that could be hours away. They could be sitting in a waiting room for hours on end. This is a sort of a form of re-victimization. How, what's the emotional toll that this takes on people if there's not someone with this training available to help them immediately?
There, in my mind, is no true way to measure the emotional toll that a victim goes through just during the event itself, let alone the events that then occur directly afterwards. It takes incredible strength for somebody to tell anyone that they've been victimized in any crime, not just sexual assault. And to have to go and report either to law enforcement or the hospital, you know, if you want a family member or someone with you, now you're also having to tell that person. And it's a shameful process, and it should not be that way, because none of this is the victim's fault. And the emotional toll aspect, that doesn't just end when this is when the initial happenings are ending and over. The emotional toll and issues, it can severely affect somebody's mental health and their physical health for years to come. Unresolved trauma, literally, the possibilities are endless. GI issues. There are studies that link unresolved traumas to some cancers, or cancer spreading and development down the line in life, let alone PTSD, anxiety, nightmares, insomnia. There's no possible way to measure the role or the importance that having somebody with any sort of training in victims and victimization, there's no way to measure, you know, how important that is to a victim.
Sabrina, this is the second time that the Women's Resource Center and Victims Intervention Program have been able to offer SANE training. It's coming up September 27th. Can you talk a little bit about the people you trained before and what the nurses that you're trying to get to this this training on the 27th can expect?
Yeah. So the nurses that we trained before, we did get a lot of positive feedback about the training. The one thing that they had asked was that adolescents be added to the training, and so we have done that this year. So this year's training covers both adult and adolescents for the forensic exams. They can expect it's 4 full days of training, starting at 7:30 in the morning at the Anthracite Hotel in Carbondale, and they will be learning everything from top to bottom. They will actually open up forensic rape kits and go through them because they can be a little daunting if you've never seen them before. There's a lot of instructions that go with them. So, you know, they will get to open them up, you know, go through them with the trainer. And then they talk about everything from the point that someone walks in when they leave the facility, and then everything after that, working with other agencies. We have folks from law enforcement, our agencies, children and youth, and the DA coming to talk with the nurses who are doing the training. So they're going to hear from everyone involved in the process of how things should go and how to prepare themselves, really.
And folks that participate in this SANE training must be an RN in Lackawanna, Pike, Susquehanna, or Wayne County. And there's more information about this. Where can folks who meet that qualification get more information, Shannon? Sabrina, sorry.
Oh, it's okay. People can find more information on either our website, wrcnepa.org, VIP's website. Erica, is it vipempowers.org?
You got it, vipempowers.org. Yep, and our social media. We also have a new Team VIP social media. So on our end, for not only the SANE training, but any upcoming events can always be found on social media and our websites, our flower sales that we do twice a year. We had a golf tournament this year. We're getting ready to do a glow run at the end of the month at Wallenpaupack High School to help bring awareness to domestic violence and such. All that stuff is always posted on our events page within our website and on all of our social media.
And Erica, we've been talking about nurses and SANE training, but beyond SANE, there are a lot of things that any community can do to support victims of sexual violence. What are some of those things?
Number one is, it doesn't matter who you are, where you live, the number one best way is through education and awareness. You know, a lot of people and even myself prior to starting this work, you know, we all have this perception of what these crimes are and what types of households or places or relationships they occur in, where these typically occur, and educating ourselves and really accepting the reality that nobody is immune from this. Nobody makes too much money or is the right or wrong race or gender or class. These types of victimized crimes, they affect everybody across all boundaries. So really learning about that in your community and spreading that education, spreading that awareness so that others can also know the same. You know, there are constantly through legislation, there are different bills and things that are being written to help support survivors, you know, keeping abreast of that information and up to date and supporting those bills and the senators and House of Representatives that are, you know, pro-passing them. Also, contact your local domestic violence and sexual assault program. Every county in Pennsylvania has one. Some of them are dual agencies so that it's one program that does both aspects, like VIP. WRC, I believe, does both as well, right, Sabrina?
Correct.
Right. So we are one agency in each of our counties, but we cover all aspects of victimizing crimes. And, you know, I can speak on VIP. We have an extensive volunteer program that we are always looking for volunteers. You do not have to have any sort of background. All that we ask is that you have that interest and really caring about fellow people and your local community. We provide all of the training that is needed for that. And at the end, our volunteers really can pick and choose what they want to do. We always need people to help cover our 24-hour crisis hotline, you know, for emergency shelter or 24-hour questions and concerns, safety issues. We always need people to help cover those, as well as we've had volunteers that can only devote 1 or 2 hours a week or a month, and they just want to answer the office phone during the day, or maybe they want to deliver the flowers from our flower sales, or work the VIP table at Wally Fest or another community event. So we are always looking for volunteers. Does not need to have a background in law enforcement or social work or any of that. Please just contact us, contact your local program and ask how you can get involved. How can you help?
Right. And also for anyone that might need help, who's been a victim of crime or abuse, who wants to speak to an advocate, or if someone knows someone, there's a number at VIP, and then there's also a number for the Women's Resource Center, a hotline as well. Could we get both of those numbers for listeners?
Yeah. So VIP, the Wayne office is 570-253-4401. The Pike office is 570-296-4357. Even though we are in both of those counties, we operate as one office. So it does not matter where you live within each county. Call us and we can help you, or we will try to help as best we can. After hours, those numbers automatically transfer over to our 24-hour on-call line that always has a local staff member on call or local volunteer. So it's not a national number that you live in Pennsylvania, you call and somebody from another state is answering your questions. And you know what? Every state is different. All the laws are different. You know, you're speaking to someone right here in your local community. Mm-hmm. If you go on our website, we also have an online chat feature. That's always, you know, helpful for teenagers that you can, you know, start an online chat with us or text message us and speak with an advocate that way. Any way that you can reach us that is best for your situation, that's what we want to do. You know, everybody is experts in their own situation.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with Erica Thaxton, the medical advocate at the Victims Intervention Program of Wayne and Pike Counties, and also Sabrina Hannon from the Women's Resource Center of Lackawanna and Susquehanna Counties. These organizations work with, they're nonprofits dedicated to helping survivors of victimizing crimes such as domestic violence, sexual assault, dating violence, stalking, and more, offering comprehensive services, including that crisis hotline we mentioned, emergency shelter, safe housing, counseling, and community education, just to name a few of the things. There's also SANE training that's coming up for nurses to help victims of sexual assault. More information at wrcnepa.org or vipempowers.org, or follow them on Facebook and Instagram. Erica and Sabrina, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and thank you for the work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, thanks for having us.
We'll take a quick break and we'll learn more about environmental DNA. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hello, I'm Antonia.
Cock-a-doodle-doo. That's Rooster Charles reminding you to listen to Farm and Country Saturday morning at 10. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. Join me, Charles, and all of our wonderful producers as we bring you the best of rural life and agriculture for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. That's Farm and Country, Saturday morning at 10, only on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Have you ever wondered if Bigfoot has wandered through your backyard, or more plausibly, a mountain lion? Environmental DNA is a powerful new tool that's used to explore these and other perhaps more pressing questions. Todd Disatel of Berryville will talk about advances in DNA sequencing technologies at a Sunshine Hall Library free library talk coming up Saturday, September 23rd at 4, and he joins us now on the phone. Todd, good morning.
Good morning.
So what is environmental DNA for those of us who are not as educated?
Well, all life sheds DNA. I mean, if something dies in the forest and decomposes, the DNA that was in its body is now in the soil or in the water, sometimes even in the air. The act of just breathing, you're giving off DNA, you're shedding skin cells, hair cells. An animal in the forest, if it rubs against a tree, hair is going to fall off. That hair contains DNA. Every time they poop or pee or do anything else, they leave DNA behind. And our new technologies are so sensitive, we can pick up these tiny fragments of DNA in the environment quite inexpensively and sequence hundreds of millions to billions of bases of DNA in a day or so. And we can then run it through databases and see what it belongs to. If it doesn't belong to something that's already known, we can do an evolutionary analysis and find out what's its closest relative from things that we do know. And so it's a really powerful tool. And it can go back in time as well. So people are using it to track past biodiversity, what climate change has done to biodiversity in the past, so we can predict in the present. It's just an amazing tool. I've actually switched my whole focus of research over to this, whereas previously I was sequencing DNA of primate genomes and genes and things like that.
And you mentioned, you know, finding this DNA in ponds and streams and soil, even in the air. One of your favorite samples for studying diseases are found in biting insects. Why is that? And why do biting insects provide such good samples?
So when a tick bites you, it's sucking up blood, a mosquito biting up. I mean, all these biting insects, they're actually getting a blood meal. And for several days, they still have your blood in them. And so it's very high quality DNA that we can get out of insects. And we can also test the insects to see what bacteria or viruses they're carrying. So it's sort of a double-edged sword. We can test the things they've been biting, and they bite all sorts of warm-blooded animals. So if they bit a mountain lion or a bear or a squirrel or a rabbit, they're going to have that animal's DNA in them. I like to think of mosquitoes, as annoying as they are, as, you know, 100 million little syringes flying around the forest waiting for me to collect their blood samples.
We mentioned that you are, well, I don't know that I mentioned it, I'm sorry, but some folks might know your name. You've made several television appearances, most notably on $10 million Bigfoot Bounty or on the History Channel Monster Quest. Have you been using these TV shows to help advance some of the science and debunk some of these myths of these monsters and Bigfoots?
That's exactly why I've done so many of them. Unfortunately, in this day and age, no network is going to just follow the nerdy scientists to see what they're doing. So you have to have something fantastical or interesting. And so looking for Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster or the Chupacabra or alien DNA, all of these things are teachable moments for me. I've estimated in my professional career as a professor, I will probably lecture to about 20,000 students and colleagues at conferences, et cetera. A single episode of some of these TV shows can have, you know, 1 to 4 or 5 million people watching. So if I have 2 or 3 minutes to explain what DNA is, how we analyze it, how evolution works, and equally important, just the scientific method. You hear a sound in the woods, it doesn't have to be Bigfoot. There are a lot of things that make noise in the woods.
And, you know, this area of, I guess, search for animals that may or may not exist, like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster, is called cryptozoology. That's not one of your key research interests, but by appearing on some of these shows, especially that Bigfoot show, You actually discovered some things that helped you in your research. What was that?
Well, we developed better techniques for collecting DNA out in the woods, how to capture mosquitoes and how to attract leeches and things like that. So that was very useful. We came up with ways to very rapidly on that show. I basically had 6 hours to go from the sample that they gave me to getting a, not a perfect ID, but a close ID. Like it's a canid. So it's a coyote or a fox or a wolf, or it's an ursid. It's a bear, cervid, elk or deer, something like that. And I designed a portable DNA lab that the production company purchased for me. And again, I had about 6 hours to go from scat, better known as poop, or feathers, or a piece of bone, maybe saliva, and locate it where it falls, you know, sort of in the tree, in the evolutionary tree. And so that was very useful. And learning how to train people in these techniques, because we have to be very careful in collecting environmental DNA that we don't contaminate it with our own DNA. So I had all of the people wearing gloves and masks, using sterile instruments, putting them into sterile tubes. So it was a learning experience for me to teach people how to do that who aren't lab-based people like myself.
And you'll probably encounter some non-lab-based people at your upcoming Sunshine Hall talk at the Sunshine Hall Free Library in Eldred on Saturday at 4. What is it you want folks to take away from this talk, besides you know, some of the more fantastical things and stories about Bigfoot?
Well, I want to really get across, again, the scientific method. You know, if you are a Bigfoot enthusiast, and you're trying to find it, you know, there's things you need to do and things you need to consider. And like all of life, if you absolutely believe something and nothing will deter you from believing it, that's no longer science. And as a scientist, I want to try to teach people how to think like a scientist, not just believe. You know, I saw a YouTube video, or I saw, you know, a tweet, and all of a sudden I'm a full-scale believer. No. You know, there are ways to interpret what we see with our own eyes, here with our ears, and fortunately DNA, it's pretty rock solid. It's very extremely difficult, if not nearly impossible, to fake it and things like that. So that's what I'm hoping they take away. And just the field of science is continuously moving and it's self-correcting. I myself have published papers in which I was wrong. And 3 years later, I had to publish paper saying I was wrong based on the evidence at the time we thought this. But look at this new wonderful evidence we have. It shows a whole different story.
And you have a house in Berryville. Any unusual creatures running through your property down there?
Oh, I just have the usual. I actually had a bear on my camera last night. Bears, bobcat, deer, except when I'm in my hunting stand. Then they seem to disappear. turkeys, bald eagles, Cooper's hawks, falcons, fishers. My favorites are the bobcats, though. They're such a beautiful, majestic animal. Oh, and then tons of coyotes, of course.
Of course. We've been talking to Todd Disotel. He's a professor of anthropology at the College of Social and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and he is giving a Sunshine Hall talk at Sunshine Hall Free Library this Saturday at 4 about environmental DNA. And you can get more information about that at sunshinehallfreelibrary.org. Todd, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll let you get back to scooping up DNA.
Okay, thank you.
We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, the Big Eddy Film Festival will get a preview. This is Radio Chatskill.
The Daily draws on the unrivaled quality and expertise of the New York Times Global Newsroom of almost 1,500 journalists. Our mission is to tell stories more deeply and to incorporate a new kind of transparency into the way those stories are told. I'm Michael Barbaro, host of The Daily. Join us for a thoughtful and human look inside the most important stories of the day. Weekday evenings at 6:30 here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The 12th annual Big Eddie Film Festival in Narrowsburg is just around the corner, Thursday, September 28th through Sunday, October 1st. The Big Eddie is produced by the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, the Arts Council for Sullivan County, and aims to advance the traditional art of storytelling by showing new independent films from around the world and right here in our own backyard. Plus, there are a few new highlights this year. I spoke with Kate Bergstrom, Big Eddie Film Festival director, recently about the upcoming festival. So Big Eddie this year, there's some pre-Big Eddie stuff going on. What's happening?
Okay, so the 23rd, we have BEFF Soundcheck with Bethel Woods, which is a free community screening of Little Richard's I Am Everything. And Lisa Portis, the director, has done an incredible job building the legacy of Little Richard as a queer, black, southern, rural sort of icon, turned rock and roll god, turned sort of godfather of rock and roll, and Jimi Hendrix. And it's the 50th anniversary of Jimi Hendrix's rockumentary.
So this is like a nice sneak peek. You're trying to get some enthusiasm before the big night. Why did this come about? What was it that you guys wanted to do to kind of get some pre-buzz going on?
Sure. So we really wanted to highlight the connection to the area and the legacy of the rural imagination and the urban imagination meeting and creating what we think is like revolution. So Jimi Hendrix was a no-brainer to celebrate in terms of his participation in Woodstock, and Little Richard is such a seminal figure. We go, we have to connect back to the music roots from our Big Eddie perspective in film to the incredible legacy of rock and roll that's up here. And also my amazing predecessor Tina had a deep relationship with Bethel Woods, and Suzanne and that whole team is so amazing. So we wanted to make sure that people got to experience both Bethel Woods, if they come up for the festival, and our awesome Narrowsburg little town.
Now, is this your first year doing this? Am I correct?
No, this is my second year.
Sorry. So how's it going into year two? What have you learned and what are you looking forward to?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've learned that this is a community that loves deep and profound discussion and fun. So we really are emphasizing, again, immersive event and brand new, never before seen films, New York premieres and state premieres and intersections between different topics, points, arguable subject matter that hopefully will get people talking about relevant issues here today.
The world premiere, big kickoff night, is September 28th. What's the film?
So actually, the opening night, as we call it, is the 29th, and that is going to be the New York premiere of Lotus Soccer Club, about a trans and lesbian and LGBTQIA soccer club in Cambodia that is going to be shown for the first time with the director present in New York, to talk about what it means to build a queer imaginative space in a rural area. So that's going to be really thrilling, and they'll have a party afterwards on Friday night. And the night before is called BEFF Ignites. It is Ignites a Single Bite, a food justice event, which not only has two screenings, the 10th anniversary of A Place at the Table, which is one of the incredible documentaries that Jeff Bridges narrates about food justice and hunger in America. And it will have La Brigade, a French film about a migrant kitchen and a bunch of new incoming chefs and a chef that finds her purpose in this world.
Kids and family, always a part of the Big Eddie Film Festival. What's some of the family programming, kids programming?
Well, Thursday night is going to be huge for that because it is all a fundraiser for A Single Bite. $5 a ticket goes to Single Bite. It's $15 a person, and kids and students are free in between those two screenings. And let me tell you, La Brigade, I just watched it again last week. It's so much fun. It's going to be A Single Bite tastings from different places around the area, the Outside Institute, the Bim Bim Bus, the Eugene Green Sprouted Farm, there's going to be all sorts of really cool single bite tastings and food truck dinner options available. So Saturday, so let's say you kick off with your whole family Thursday night and Friday night, you come celebrate. They want more. Come on by, because Kids Make Film is going to be celebrating kids who've made films in this upstate area of all different sorts. And it'll have professional actor and director present for a talk back after the Kids Make Film to talk about what it means to start a journey in this career professionally. Now, the really cool thing that Ariel and the team at DVA have put together is this Drawing on Film Workshop 2, which is limited to 25 participants, but you're going to be able to see your drawings in action at the Rural Shorts later on in the day, too, after you participate in that workshop. Straight Curve has supermodels and agents from around the country who are going to be talking about not just body positivity, but what it means to live in your body and celebrate your body, and the transition of our culture into a culture of acceptance and love versus a culture of restraint and conformity.
And back again on Sunday morning, Sexy Breakfast.
Yes, my favorite sweet treat, the Sunday Sexy Breakfast. That, again, is going to be raising money for sex education around the country and allowing for people to visit these new and old gems of short films that celebrate not just body positivity and sex ed positivity, but different experiences of what it means to be sexy. Not only will this be in a breakfast, meaning Bridge Street Bakehouse is going to have treats, Two Queens Coffee, mimosas for those who imbibe will be present, but there will also be a pole dancing workshop. So make sure to come on by for Sexy Breakfast. Heck yeah.
Yeah. And then let's give a special shout out to the volunteers who helped make the Big Eddie Film Festival.
Oh my gosh.
What it is.
Volunteers, you are what make the Big Eddie possible. Your love of these films and of our incredible community has made this festival shine for the past 12 years, and we could not do it without you. I hope that volunteers are not only going to be enjoying films and enjoying people this year, but be ambassadors for these films and these artists and these conversations, whether it be a scary, spooky night of a brand new horror film on Saturday night or on Sunday, the Dude Abides party at the Pump House. Hopefully we'll have a chance to cheer the volunteers on too, because you make it happen.
And where can folks get more information about the schedule and ticket information?
Great. Well, all access passes are on sale for $125, thanks to some incredible donations. We can offer it at this price this year. I highly recommend, because it gets you into every party, every film event. We have so much for families, for LGBTQIA folks, for couples, for fly fishermen and women and people, for people who love to explore and expand their possibilities of what it means to take in art. You can go to BigEddieFilmFest.org and find the schedule and all of the different artists and panelists information as well. Single tickets are going to go on sale this week.
Kate Bergstrom, Big Eddie Film Festival Director, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for putting it on again in the 12th year. Amazing.
It's so amazing. Thanks for having me. I look forward to seeing you at Big Eddie.
That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. We have more of the episodes at wjffradio.org. And while you're there, take a look at the list of honorees for the 2023 Radio Catskill Community Awards and get some tickets. That's coming up September 28th at Seminary Hill in Calicoon. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from the Women's Health Center in Honesdale, Hamlin, Waymart, Carbondale, and Lords Valley in Pennsylvania. Physicians and certified midwives who deliver. The Women's Health Center is a Wayne Memorial Community Health Center. WMH.org. NACL Theater Highland Lake. Innovative performance and community action. NACL.org. And from listener donations at WJFFradio.org.
Hi there. This is Brian, host of The Secret Show. Friday nights at 9. I'll be playing a mix of indie, alternative, college, rock, and pop. Some new music and some old classics. That's The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
She's the best.
Hi, this is Marco Werman, host of The World. We bring you international perspectives on issues worldwide and here in the U.S. Our reporters in the Americas, Africa, Europe, and Asia get to the heart of the day's news. Afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. W233AH Monticello.